Hello and welcome to a special edition of The Breakdown, the RTE Rugby Podcast. I'm Michael Corcoran. A pretty mixed year on all fronts for Irish rugby in 2016. Well, that's a subject I've discussed recently with the performance director of the IRFU, David Nusafora.
David Nusafora, David, can I guess, I suppose, have a chat initially and talk to you about where at the end of the calendar year Irish rugby sits in terms of what's happening in the last 12 months. It seems to be in a pretty healthy place at the moment.
Yeah, if I suppose we look back on it now and look at the things that have been achieved in this year, if people had said to us at the start, would you take this as a finishing point for the year, you know, I'd say we'd definitely say yes. There's been a lot of positives, you know, right across Irish rugby this year. Obviously, November was a highlight with the things that were achieved by the national team and the fantastic win in Chicago. And then, you know, the great performances here, you know, even though we went down to the Kiwis in the second game, I just thought the effort they put in that day was terrific and really showed that it wasn't a one-off performance in Chicago. This team now can compete on a consistent basis. And then to follow it up under difficult circumstances against Australia started to show the durability and resilience and depth that we're starting to build across Irish rugby, which is one of the key drivers that we said we wanted to achieve. Start building competition for places, start building the depth that allows people to fight for positions, which in turn creates performance. And I think that's where we're starting to get to.
And that level of consistency is there, you know, in relation to the national team, when you also factor in, you know, a first ever victory away to South Africa in South Africa. So that consistency of performance that you've been talking about building, you know, we've seen that in the last 6 or 8 months.
Yeah, South Africa was a good starting point because I think a lot of people had written us off going down there with the team that was selected due to the number of injuries. But, you know, those players that went down there and took that first test match down in Cape Town was something really special. And then, you know, they fought so hard there in the second and third test matches and, you know, could have and probably should have won at least one of them. So we learnt a heck of a lot from that. And I think that certainly carried us over into the November period with the experience that those players got down in South Africa and the confidence and belief they got out of it. So I think there's been something like 17 new caps in this calendar year. So, you know, that's a testament to the players. It's also a testament to our coaching staff and their ability to be able to bring these boys through.
There's no doubt whatsoever that they've been helped by the performances of the provinces and the provincial teams. You know, we're almost two-thirds of the way through a European season at this stage, and you know, everybody's snapping at the heels of a pool leader, if not leading the pools at this moment in time.
Yeah, that's a great position for us to be in, and people often ask the question, do we need the provinces to be strong to get the national team strong, or is it the other way around? I think neither can exist without each other performing well, and I think the benefits are starting to show through. The provinces have done a really good job in starting to bring a lot of the younger players through and give them opportunity, which in turn allows them to contest places in the national team. And now we're seeing a lot of these younger boys come through at national level as well. So again, it's all there's lots of moving parts to this, but the fact that there are lots of people getting opportunity, that's how you start to build depth, and competition creates performance, as I said earlier.
And there's huge competition amongst the four Irish teams. I mean, how important would you see in the overall picture was Connacht's victory in, you know, winning the Guinness Pro 12 last year, a breakthrough season for them? It's been an emotional roller coaster for them for a long period of time.
Yeah, it's I mean, the job that they've done out there has been, I mean, it's been fantastic for them. It's been fantastic for the people out in Connacht. But their contribution to Irish rugby over that period of time has been terrific, because they're now producing, you know, a large number of Irish players out there, and you know, a lot of players now see that realistically as a pathway to be able to play for Ireland. And you know, we've got four highly competitive teams where any of our players can go to and feel that they're going to be well coached and have a great opportunity to be the best players that they can be and strive to play for Ireland.
You've mentioned the coaching on a couple of occasions. When you see a scenario where Joe Schmidt has signed on for another period of time, you've also got a really quality coach like Andy Farrell in. How important is it that you have people like that guiding Team Ireland forward for the next number of years?
It's been a huge factor for us, and to make sure that the quality of our coaching throughout the country can be at the highest level we can get to. And we're fortunate that Joe signed on and committed through to the World Cup. I thought that it was really fortuitous that that Andy Farrell came on the market at the right time this time last year, and we were pretty quick to jump and secure Andy's services, which has been great, and add him to the coaching staff there. And we've got coaches like Richie Murphy, Simon Easterby and Greg Feek now, who are really starting to turn into very experienced international coaches. So we've got a really strong coaching group there. And then obviously that has then cascaded down into the provinces, and we're fortunate now to be able to get Rassi Erasmus's services down in Munster, and he's done a terrific job with them down there. Jacques Nienaber came across with him, and again, that's been a huge uplift for Munster. Connacht, we're sad to see Pat go, but he's done a great job out there, and we'll be working hard to replace him with a candidate who could bring as much as Pat did to the table. And Leinster, on top of the Pro 12, on top of their pool, so Leo's maturing as a coach. Stuart Lancaster has been a great addition for them, which has been terrific. And we've got Les Kiss up there, who we all know, the quality of his coaching pedigree.
The wider coaching family is one that's rather experienced, isn't it? And I mean, we can see, people who are not just experienced at club are at that level within their own country, but they've coached at international level, and they're imparting that experience on the generation of people who are coming through.
Yeah, and if we're serious about letting our players, or striving to make our players be as good as they can be, it is about coaching. We've got to take the time to invest in coaching, and the same time as we're striving to do that at the top end of the game to get the best out of our players, we are also recognising the fact that we need to keep working hard on developing coaches at other levels within the game, and there's a lot of work being done at that end as well to increase the quality and knowledge of our coaches around the country.
Now, you've mentioned Connacht and Pat Lamb and his decision to move on at the end of this season. There's not always going to be a huge loss to Connacht in terms of driving Connacht forward and bringing it to the next level. What sort of a part will you have to play, or what role do you have to play in conjunction with Connacht in making sure that the next appointment is the right one and the absolutely correct one?
Yeah, we've got a great working relationship there. So, Connacht need to understand what they want as a coach out there. And we've sat down very early on in the piece and laid out a profile with them, with the CEO, Willie Ryan, and with their game board to establish the profile of the person that we think we need going forward. So between us, we'll work diligently and come up with the right person over the next period of time to build on the work that's been done out there by Pat and the players.
It is a crucial appointment, isn't it?
Every coaching appointment's crucial. There's been so much good work done out there. Obviously, we're all very, very conscious of what we do next, where do we go next. But that's the reality of sport. People will always come and go and move on, and it's how well you plan around, what do you do next, where do you go next. It's the same for players when they move on. There's always a period of time where you think, gee, we can't let that happen, that person's irreplaceable. Without any disrespect to anyone, no one's irreplaceable, and you work to build on the good work that people have done before you. So we'll do that out there with the coaching.
There's no doubt that there's a very experienced group of players currently playing rugby within this country. There's a new generation coming through. you know, the Irish teams try and supplement that with quality overseas players. That's something that maybe has come in for a bit of criticism in terms of, you know, how long a player should stay or move or otherwise. How difficult a balancing act or a juggling act is it to make sure that the right person comes in to play with a province and stays for just exactly the right length of time before it's time for them to move on?
Yeah, it is. It is a delicate situation. It's a balancing act, as you say, to try and get it right. And, you know, each case is slightly different. You know, what we try and do is with the foreign players is try and see, one, that they wear and how they can add value to the provinces. And that may be through a number of different ways. But there always has to be a finite time on it, because with four teams and only four teams, we have to be very, very conscious that we've got that pathway for our own players to come through. And, you know, I'd like to think that whenever we are looking at a foreign player coming into any of the teams, that we're thinking beyond that and we're sitting down and we're talking about, okay, at what point in time and what person have we got coming through behind that person to be able to take over and add value to the national succession plan in that particular position. So we've always got to be conscious of that. Four teams is very delicate, and for that reason we've got to be smart about the way we use our resources.
When you look specifically at one player, Jaco Tate, who's come into Munster on a short-term contract for a short, you know, period of time, he's made a dramatic impact. He's supposed to finish at the end of December, but I gather there may be some efforts to be made or some argument to be put forward that a player like that could have his contract extended to the end of the season. Is that something that maybe the RFU would be open to?
I think firstly, you know, again, when we're looking at bringing foreign players into the picture, it's the onus is on the province and ourselves to make sure that we work together to choose well. In this case, you know, Munster have chosen well, and Jaco has been a great addition. He's here on a loan. He's not contracted to us. It's a loan agreement out of Western Province, and he's there just for the period of time to cover Francis Saley's injury. So Francis is due back shortly. We'll sit and look at the scenarios that exist down in Munster. If there isn't room for Jaco, well then, you know, unfortunately he'd have to probably leave and go back. Western Province may call him back, because that's what the loan agreement was. We're not in full control of this one. Look, we'll work with Munster, we'll work with Western Province, we'll work with Jaco, and we'll just see what how this pans out.
In terms of Irish players, and maybe those who are not specifically in a match day 15 or even 23, would you like to see increased movement of players between provinces? You know, for example, you know, that there may be some players who are in you know, contracted to a province at the moment, really good in the back row, but they're not getting their game there. Should we have a scenario or look at a scenario where there's increased movement between the four Irish provincial teams?
I've said this a lot over the time that I've been here, and you know, I do believe that we've got to keep asking those questions. We've got to keep asking the questions to the players, to the provinces, around their player choices. And if there is opportunity elsewhere, we have to keep flagging that and asking the questions as to, is this a possibility? Are we better off there with this player? You know, and put that into the player's mind. Will we get a lot of movement? We're starting to get enough, certainly at the younger levels of the game, the players coming through at academy level, which is great. There's a certain amount of movement up in the professional teams. I've never expected it to be huge, but as long as it's very well thought out and well calculated as to who is going where. And I think the biggest thing is that by asking those questions, we've put it at the very forefront of the province's minds and also at the players' minds. And sometimes if there was maybe hesitancy in the past to maybe not give a younger player a go, what I'm noticing now is that there's a lot more willingness to be able to select the younger players and give them that opportunity. So if that's the outcome of the pressure that we're putting on by asking the questions, well, that's a good outcome as well.
I know that player welfare is something that's always to the forefront of everybody's mind, and certainly the RFU can take a pat in the back because of that, in terms of their attitude. Jonathan Sexton, what's the position with him, or where is he in terms of his fitness? You know, a lot of people concerned about him, and maybe, you know, there was some chat that he may need to take a break from the game.
Yeah, it was like any player who succumbs to injury. We've got to look at the best way of getting that player back on the field and keeping him on the field. We got to a point there with Johnny where he was breaking down with the hamstring issue. So the medical teams got together and put a plan into place. And it's about the player. It's about making sure that we could get him over the issues that he's got at the moment. And if that took a prolonged period of time to get him right, that's what everyone agreed needed to be done. If he comes back fitter and stronger, then he's going to be there and able to play for all the teams that he's contracted to play for the rest of the season. That's the aim. So it's about having a plan in place to get him back to 100% fitness. So he's well on the road to that, and we'd be confident that's going to happen. And in the meantime, it gave a few other young blokes a go. Young Ross Byrne certainly did very well over the last 2 weeks, and there's another young player who's been exposed to high-level rugby, so there's lots of positives to come out of it as well.
In terms of players and contracts and contract renegotiations and that, before your time, and I'm not bringing you back to then, but that was something that seemed to be done towards the end of the season. It seems to be kind of more structured these days, because we're now getting emails pretty early in the season telling us that, you know, such a player is signed on for another 2 or 3 years. Are you happy that that's something that's in hand, or you know, there are maybe players who are off contract at the end of this season? Where do we sit in terms of all of that?
Look, each year, you know, that's just one of the things you have to deal with in professional sport, and we try and work very hard to stay on top of it. We try and make Irish rugby as attractive as possible to the players through a number of different means. We've got a pretty good retention rate of our top players. We do lose some occasionally, but that's just going to happen. We've got a lot of players that have signed on beyond from next season onwards. We've got a couple more coming off contract at the moment. Devin Tone has just re-signed recently, which was great news because he's really playing some great rugby at the moment. We've still got Jamie Heaslip's contract to try and resolve, and we'd be hopeful that, with a bit more work, we can get that across the line as well. So, it's an ongoing challenge, contracting. That's just part of the professional game.
Is it made that bit more difficult by the fact that, you know, clubs in other countries, say France and England, because of their respective TV deals, have deeper pockets? Is it, you know, do you have to use all your persuasive charm to get somebody to stay here within this country?
Getting someone else to do it then. It is a challenge, there's no doubt. So we've got to be nimble, we've got to be smart about the way we go about our business. And, players, obviously it's a professional game. Money is important. But one of the things that players will always want to do is they'll want to win, and they want to be the best that they can be. So for us, getting the best coaches in is really important. So our investment in coaching, I believe, helps us retain our players. So that would be one key issue for us to keep addressing. The second one would be, as we've discussed before, our player welfare program, that we actually go to great lengths to manage our players very, very carefully, that we try and make sure that they get the longevity in their careers that they want. So there's a number of different things that we do to try and counterbalance the money that exists in the UK and in France, and we've got to keep working on those other areas as well. So, it won't get any easier. It'll continue to be a battle for us. We probably won't retain everyone over time, but we'll be working very, very hard to keep the players that we think are important to us.
We've spoken previously about how this year calendar year that's gone by was a season of firsts. I mean, it was a first as well for the women because they played November internationals for the first time ever. Given the context in which, the background in which they were played in, with the Rugby World Cup coming up next season, I mean, it's a massive, 9 months for the Irish women at this moment in time.
Yeah, it is, and it was great for us to be able to have those games in the November. We played against the three best teams in the world, which is exactly what we needed to do. We know that we need to keep building the depth in the women's game in this country, and the combination of how we manage the women's program, which we see as the women's sevens program and the 15s program, has all been under the same umbrella, and how we manage those players. That's the way we're trying to build the depth there. So Tom Tini exposed a lot of new players into that three-test series. The results probably weren't what we were looking for, but the experience that we'll gain out of that and then go into the Six Nations with a broader playing pool will again position us for the World Cup next August. So, it's a great starting point. The girls have been working really hard. We've had a great training regime in place for them now over the last 12 months. So the opportunities that exist now in women's rugby are extensive, and hopefully we'll start to see the benefits of all this work in the near future.
And I mean, to stage a Rugby World Cup, the women's Rugby World Cup next August, I mean, that's obviously massive in terms of Irish rugby, but it's huge in terms of drawing people's attention and attracting people into the sport moving forward.
Yeah, it is. the opportunity for us to have an event like that within the country, I think, is a massive opportunity on a number of fronts to really showcase the women's game. Gives us a big opportunity to be able to grow the game, let young girls see what they can get themselves involved into. In the past 12 months, we've had the sevens qualifying tournaments here in Dublin as well. So women's rugby has certainly been showcased at a very high level. And as I say, it's laying the foundations for the interest for young girls to come in and play the game.
Are you happy that the conveyor belt, I'll use that phrase, of people coming through at under 20 level is sufficiently strong to feed into the provincial teams and to see people coming through to play at the top international level? I guess the name of Joey Carberry is one that's been thrown about there for the last while.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of work has been done in the last 18 months, building the whole talent pathway structures. Our focus is on that under 16 to under 20 age group as a level to be able to identify players around that 15 years of age and then bring them into a system and to be able to bring them through. We hired the four provincial talent coaches earlier in the year, so we've got added resources now working hard down in that area that connect into the academies around identifying and then developing talent and bringing it through. The under 20s is the, I suppose, end point of that phase. So by the time they get into that under 20 age group, they have a great playing program to showcase themselves in with the Six Nations and the Junior World Cup. The performances this year, the Junior World Cup was obviously a great success. We didn't quite go all the way, but again, now to have our under 20s rolling New Zealand in that competition, that's important to build that belief around being able to beat the bigger teams in the world. The talent that's coming through there, we may not always have the best team, but as long as we're identifying and developing the best individuals within those teams each year so that we can get the best players then moving through into the provinces, the talent pathway is as good as how we connect with the provincial teams, because we can invest in talent development, but obviously playing the game at a high level is the finishing school of what we do. We're starting to get that connectivity now between the pathway and the work that goes on with our development coaches. And you can see the work that they're doing now is being reflected in how well prepared those players are when they're getting their opportunities within the provincial setup. So we've got coaches in the provinces now willing and confident to be able to play these young boys who have been well coached and well prepared. And with the experience that they're getting there now, the whole thing starts to connect up. So, you know, we're far from the finished product, but I think that the foundations are in place to be able to keep, developing good young Irish players.
The question of game time for players like that is one that, you know, a lot of people speak about, whether it be, well, it would be in a sort of a British and Irish Cup scenario or in all, you know, All-Ireland League or that type of thing. I mean, how important is it that players get proper and substantial game time into their system to help them in their growth, obviously, because the more of that they get, the better they can contribute?
Yeah. We look at, we sit down with the academy coaches each year and we look at developing a playing plan for the players. We look at where they're at and what stage of their development they're at, and then that connects up to the volume or amount of game time we're looking for them at different levels of the game. So it might be AIL, it might be BNI Cup. We've now got the added advantage of sevens, so we've now got the ability to expose players to high levels of international rugby using the sevens program as well as the BNI Cup and the AIL, and then obviously provincial Pro 12 rugby. The more avenues we have, the more flexibility we've got to be able to give more players playing time opportunities at the highest level is really important to us, and that we get the balance of that right and the timing of what they should be exposed to right. So, it's a very important part of the process.
Can I just ask you about the sevens and the sevens program? It's kind of in its infancy still. It feels as if it is. Where does it fit in terms of men and women right now?
Well, I'll start with the men's game. You know, we've already had, I think, a high level of success. The boys have come from a non-existent program 18 months, 2 years ago to now, during the year, missing out by two games for qualifying for the Olympics. So that was a crash course in sevens. It shows the talent that we've got in this country, and given the proper exposure and playing opportunities, what they can do. From that group, we not only now have we qualified for the top series in Europe and the Grand Prix series in next summer, but from that group of players, a number of players have obviously come through into the Pro 12 ranks. They've gotten the confidence to be able to show what they can do on the field and improve their skills at the same time. So, you know, we saw on the weekend Adam Burns' performances. We've seen Barry Daly and Tom Daly both win contracts with Leinster. We've got Alex Wootton down in Munster now earning a contract for himself down there. We've got a number of other young players that have come through the program knocking on the door of Pro 12. And that's what it's all about. It's about finding different ways of doing things to develop people so they can be the best that they can be. And the sevens gives us that opportunity. So it's going to play a big role going forward in continuing to put players on the conveyor belt, as you say. In the women's game, we've done well to maintain our spot in the World Series. We've kicked off with a pretty good performance down in Dubai last week that we want to build on in Sydney in come February. We're bringing new girls, new players into the game all the time. And under that whole women's rugby program umbrella, a lot of those girls will be putting themselves up for selection as well for the World Cup come August. Women's rugby is only going to continue to grow. It is the fastest growing team sport in the world at the moment, and we have to be a part of it. We've got a long way to go, but there's been a lot of progress made in a very short period of time, and our ambition is to stay on that World Series and to be able to continue to bring more young players into the game through sevens and then bring them through into the game of 15s as well. So sevens is here to stay with regards to the world game, we've got to do our best to understand how we utilise that for the benefit of Irish rugby.
And before we finish up, 2017, a couple of weeks away, do you have a wish list for then? I mean, I know maybe the right to hold a Rugby World Cup is outside your remit, but certainly there are a lot of challenges on the pitch for Ireland in the next while at all levels.
Never gets any easier. I mean, that's why people love high-level sport, because it just gets harder. So we've got to build on what we've done in 2016 now. We've got to continue to try and pit ourselves against the best in the team, best in the world. We've got to try and help the provinces drive them to be the best that they can be. We've got to keep our talent pathway ticking over and getting better. We've got to continue to work on our coaches and the level of coaches that we've got within the game. There's a lot of things left to do. So it's been a pleasing 2016, but that doesn't make 2017 any easier.
Some interesting views there from the IRFU Performance Director, David Nusafora. That's our final podcast of 2016. From myself, Michael Corcoran, and producer Andrew O'Connor, thanks for listening, and see you in 2017.